Computer, enter subsystem TWAT radio.
Watch Radio. Basic assembly language for reverse code engineering. With Nightlord.
Hey everybody. This is Nightlord, and today I'm going to be talking about reverse code engineering, which is just reverse engineering. It's another way of saying it. Today's topic is the first of three serial TWA episodes. Today we will be discussing assembly language or basic assembly language. This is in no way a 100% end-all guide to assembly language. It's very basic, just to help you understand why it's necessary to use assembly and what you need to know in order to do reverse engineering. We'll start off today with discussing exactly what assembly language is. A processor reads a program file. It converts to binary data, which is zeros and ones that the machine understands. The instructions that are used to create mathematical calculations, they're all binary data. So in order for people to be able to read them, we need to convert them up to another level, the next level up, which is assembly language. It's necessary to understand basic assembly language structure because it's different depending on what processor you're using. Pentium 4, for instance, has a lot of instructions, and a RISC processor would have a limited set. The difference can make one processor more desirable in an environment than another. Issues such as space, power, and heat are considered before selecting a processor for a device. So it's necessary to understand what your target is and what different kinds of processors you'll be working with. The next thing is registers. It's possible for a processor to read and write data from RAM or even cache, but it creates a bottleneck. In order to correct the problem, processors include internal memory. The memory is split up into placeholders known as registers. And depending on the processor type, each register may hold from 8 bits to 128 bits of information. The most common is 32 bits, and that's why Win32 is a 32-bit application. The same goes for 64-bit processors, so you know each register holds 64 bits of information. The information in the register can include a value that's used directly by the processor, such as a number or a decimal number. It could also hold address representing the next line of code to execute, and that's where buffer overflows come in to play. The ability to store data locally means the processor can easily perform memory read and write operations. The ability increases the speed of the program by reducing the amount of reading and writing between RAM and the processor. In typical x86 processors, in IBM-based Intel AMD processors, there are several registers that you'll see when you're reverse engineering. And the first is the AX register, which is the principal register used in arithmetic calculations, often called the accumulator. AX is frequently used to accumulate the results of mathematics. BX or BP is the base register, typically used to store base addresses of programs. The CX is the count register, and often used to hold values representing the number of times the process is to be repeated. DX is the data register, and it simply holds the data. SI and DI are the source and destination registers, are used to offset addresses to allow a register to access various elements of list or array. SS, CS, ES, and DS are the stack segments, code segments, extra segments, and data segments, respectively, and are used to break the program up into parts as it executes. The segment registers are assigned the base values of each segment from here. The offset values are used to access each command in the program. SP holds the stack pointer address, which is used to hold temporary values required by a program. As the stack is filled up, the SP changes accordingly. When a value is required from the stack, it is popped off the stack or referenced using a SP plus offset address. And the IP register is the instruction pointer, and that holds the value of the next instruction to be executed. Those registers only apply to x86. There are many similarities, but not all processors work the same way. For example, an ARM processor, which is a RISC derivative used in handheld devices, shares some of the register types, but under different names. Understanding how registers work is important, because most of the time when using reverse engineering, you're either trying to find a flaw in an application for buffer overflow, so you need to know how to influence the registers in order to jump from the next line of code that it's supposed to be running to your line of code and how to fill the register with that code. It's also used to understand where memory addresses lie as far as copyright infringement, possibly, where you're looking for the instruction set on how it checks the registration code or the password for the application and be able to bypass that. The next step is understanding the stack. The amount of data a processor can hold locally within the registers is pretty limited. To overcome it, memory from the RAM or the cache is used to hold pieces of information required by the program to run. The stack is nothing more than just a chunk of RAM that stores the data for use in the processor. As a program needs the stored information, data is pushed onto the stack. In contrast, a program needs to recall the information it's popped off the stack. This method of updating the stack is known as last in, first out. So just imagine having a long tube, and you know you're trying to fill it with something, and when you need it, you have to grab the first one off the top of the stack, and then it moves up. As you receive new information, it's pulled off so the next part can be used. Now you have a few registers to be able to work with, but the stack is important in understanding how the data is manipulated from the RAM. While the stack is used to hold just data, the reason is a little bit more complicated. As the program executes, it branches out into numerous subroutines that perform small functions to be used by the main program. For example, many copy protection schemes perform a serial number check when they are executed. In this case, the flow of the program temporarily branches to verify the correct serial number was entered. To facilitate the process, the address of the next line of code in the main program is placed onto the stack with any values that will be required once the execution has returned. After the subroutine is completed, it checks the stack for the return address and jumps to that point in the program. It's important to note that due to the last in first out operation, the stack procedures can call other procedures that call yet more procedures, and the stack will still always point to the correct information. As each procedure finishes, it pops off the stack the value it had previously pushed on. The next thing to understand is addressing. The concept of addressing when performing reverse engineering is, for example, in an ARM processor, loading data from the stack is often done using an offset. Without understanding how an offset is used or what value in the stack is actually refers to, you could easily become lost, as you probably already are. In the case of ARM processors, the following command loads R1 with the value located at the address of the stack pointer plus 8 bytes. LDR R1, comma, left brace SP, comma, space 0x8, right brace. To add to the confusion, the value loaded into R1 may not even be the true value, but rather a pointer to another location that holds the target value for which you're searching. There are two main methods for locating an address. The first is the use of segment address plus an offset. The segment address acts as a base address for a chunk of memory that contains code or values to be used by a program. For a more direct approach, a program could also use an effective address, which is the actual address represented by segment plus offset address. As I said before, a program uses several registers to keep track of data and the flow of execution. When these registers are used together, the processor has instant and easy access to a range of data. For example, the BX register is often used to store a base address. This address is used as a defined point in memory from which values can be called. For instance, if a program needs access to an array or a list of data in memory, then BX could be set to the beginning of that list. Using the BX address combination with an SI or DI value, the full list of values could be accessible to the processor using the BX plus DI reference. If that isn't enough control, you could always access the element in an array using offset, such as BX plus DI plus 8. As you can see, addressing can be confusing unless you have a firm understanding of how the registers are used. Now that you understand a little bit about registers and how memory is accessed, opcodes are the next step. This is just a summary, so each processor type and version will have a different instruction set. Most manufacturers, I know Intel does for sure, they include a list of opcodes that are used for each of their processors. Some of the variations are minor, like using jump or JMP versus B, which is branch, to redirect processor to code and memory. Other variations, such as numbers of opcodes available to the processor, have a much larger impact on how the program works. RISC processors are going to have a lot less opcodes than a Pentium processor. Opcodes are the actual instructions that a program performs. Each opcode is represented by one line of code, which contains the opcode, the operand that are used by the opcode. The number of operands varies depending on the opcode. However, the size of the line is always limited to the set length of the program's memory. In other words, a 16-bit program will have a 1-byte opcode and a 1-byte operand, whereas a 32-bit program will have a 2-byte opcode and a 2-byte operand. Note that this is just one possible configuration, not the case with all instruction sets. As stated previously, the entire suite of opcodes available to a processor is called an instruction set. Each processor requires its own instruction set. You need to be familiar with the instruction set of the processor that you're using before you can do reverse engineering on that device. It's unless you're going from Pentium to Pentium, or Athlon to Athlon, or RISC to RISC, the instruction sets are going to be different no matter what computer you sit down at. So it's wise to understand the instruction set for the computer that you will use to reverse engineer code. Without understanding the vagaries between the opcodes, you'll spend a lot of hours trying to figure out what the program is doing. It can be quite difficult when you're faced with such confusing opcodes as UMULs, R9, R0, R0, R0. Without first being familiar with ARM instruction set, you probably wouldn't guess that it performs an unsigned multiply along if the LS set status is set, and then updates the status flag according to what the flag is after it executes. So it can be pretty confusing if you don't understand what the opcodes are. One final thing, when programs are disassembled, the output syntax may vary according to disassemblers that you're using. A particular disassembler may place operands in reverse order from another disassembler, and many of the Linux disassemblers, they flop the opcodes or the operands as opposed to a Windows debugger or a disassembler. That's really about it for basic assembly. You can look up more information on assembly language. I have a few references. There is The Art of Assembly Language, which is at http://webster.cs.ucr.edu/page_asm/art-of-asm.html. Another one is Assembly Language Step-by-Step Programming with DOS and Linux, which is written by Jeff Dunteman. It's published by John Wiley and Sons of May 2000. I don't have the ISBN number, but look for it in your local library. Another is Assembly Language Introduction to Computer Architecture Using the Intel Pentium by Karen Miller and Jim Goodman, which was published by Oxford in 1999. Here is a IA32 Intel Architecture Software Developer's Manual, which will give you the instruction set for the Pentium 4. It's at intel.com/design/pentium4/manuals/24547012.pdf. And also, here's one for the Intel Xscale. It's an assembly language quick reference card, and that's for mobile devices. It's at intel.com/design/iio/swsup/11139.htm. I hope that gives you a little taste of assembly language and what you can do. There's a book that I actually started my research with called Security Warrior by O'Reilly, and this is actually the base information for the next two shows that I'll be doing. The next two will be Windows reverse engineering and then Windows CE reverse engineering. Well, I'll actually discuss the process and tools of actual reverse engineering, so go out and learn some assembly so you'll know what I'm talking about in the next show. And keep listening to TWAT Radio, and thanks a lot for listening.
TWAT Radio is a community project that needs people willing to lay down some good shows to make the shit work. So submit a show today.